Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Community Relations for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also serve clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Heather Deaton, EIG Wealth Advisor, and the topic of discussion is charitable giving strategies for tax-efficient giving. So, Heather, why don't you start by giving us a little bit of your background in financial planning, and why is charitable giving important to you?
Thanks, Jill. And I'm just going to jump in also and say that, you know, we've kind of shifted around some roles for this episode. Oftentimes, I have hosted this show with other guests. Now, today I am a guest. You normally host our Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community show. Now you're hosting Money Sense. So this is just great. I love to be able to be creative and kind of mix it up.
Right. We do what needs to get done, don't we?
We certainly do. So my background in financial planning, you know, I've been a wealth advisor here. I've been with Ellenbecker for 8 years. I have my certified financial planning designation, and I love to work with clients and get them to their goals and their dreams and even face their fears and sometimes and plan those outcomes they want to see, retirement, successfully launching their kids, saving for education, doing things to be tax efficient, planning for taxes in the future. And one main like core value of mine is definitely service and giving back, which ties into charitable giving. I'm very active in volunteering, and I'm on the board for Fondy Food Center, which is in the city of Milwaukee. There's a whole mission there that I could dive into. I'll save that for later in the show. But really that charitable giving is a way to, you know, take what you've earned and grown and saved and be able to do great work with it. Again, we can always volunteer our time, you know, our talents, but then also our treasure. And so that's a big piece of it. Why it's important to me is that I again, have just a heart for service and giving back. And a lot of these nonprofit organizations, without individual giving, they're not going to make it. And, you know, to be able to support the community and others around us and people that might be less have less access, they're more marginalized, right? There's just some hurdles to overcome. That's how we can do that, by sharing our resources.
And I love what you share about your heart of giving, because at EIG we have core values, and one of them is benevolence and giving back. And we hire oftentimes, well, always around our core values. Mm-hmm. And so it's no surprise that you and what you stand for and what's important to you is a very good fit with EIG. You talk about this concept of warm hand giving. So can you share how you define that, what that is?
Well, right, because, you know, there's tax-efficient ways to give, right? That's part of your financial plan, is giving charitably And there's better ways to do it to save taxes, and there's ways to do it without giving a thought about it. So what we focus on for holistic planning is to, you know, of course you're going to give from your heart. You're going to give from your soul. You're going to give because it's important to you. And if we can manage it the best way, you might even save some taxes because of it.
And everybody benefits, right?
Right, then everybody benefits. That
gives, it's a win-win.
Exactly. You have more left to, you know, for your family, you have more left to give again. So warm hand giving, the way I think of that is while you're alive. So it's during your lifetime. This isn't charitable giving at death. It's not, you know, giving a bequest in your will. We'll talk about that later. It's about when you are, again, you're still alive. So it's giving with a warm hand. One consideration is just giving cash, right? It's very easy to donate cash. We can do that very easily. We can write checks to organizations. We can drop money in a bucket for organizations. The tax side of it is that you can take a tax deduction for any money that you give to a 501c3, a nonprofit. However, because of how high the standard deduction is, you might not really be getting a tax benefit for those dollars until you like reach a certain level. So one way to look at that is how do you get the biggest bang for your buck by maybe bundling a couple years of giving in 1 year. So say as an example, you normally give $4,000 to an organization every year, or multiple organizations get a total of $4,000. Maybe you do all of your giving for 1 year in January, and then before December 31st, you give another year's worth. Then the following year, you just don't give anything. So that bundling that $4,000 or $5,000 into 1 year of a couple years of giving gives you more like an $8,000 or $10,000 charitable gift in that one tax year. That might get you above that standard deduction. So you're actually going to get a bigger deduction because you gave. And that is going to be that tax efficiency where you get credit for that giving because you got above a certain level. So, you know, a lot of this hinges on the current tax laws and that high standard deduction, and we'll see what happens in the future with that. But that is one of the pieces about that bundling where you can maximize your giving better if you've got the funds to do it, again, within one tax year, and then just know and let your charities know, hey, I'm not really going to give next year because I'm doing I'm doubling up this year. So that's one way to take advantage of the standard of the tax deductibility of a charitable gift. The maximum that you can do is in 1 year is 60% of your adjusted gross income. So if you are going to try to bundle to the extent that you cross over that, you're just not going to be able to use that extra in that one tax year. That's a conversation with your tax accountant. You know, our tax service team here does this kind of planning with clients all the time. So that would be something to just ask, like, hey, where should I kind of max out my giving if you were really looking at giving a lot compared to what your actual income is. I'm just going to keep moving on to other tax strategies. So for sometimes people have investments in a brokerage account. Right? It's not in their IRA or their 401k. They're just holding it in a brokerage account. And maybe they've held it for a long time. You can imagine somebody who bought maybe Apple or Google many, many, many years ago, and they've held it this whole time. We know how much growth there's been in certain companies, right? So all of that is considered appreciation. If you sell a stock, you're going to pay taxes on that profit you make. So you bought a stock for $10, you sell it many years later for $100, you have incurred a $90 profit that you will pay capital gains taxes on. So imagine if instead of writing a check to an organization for $100 out of your checking account, you gave them that one stock that's worth $100. So what happens then? That's your charitable gift. That's your deduction, if you will. And you never sold it, so you never realized that profit, so thus you don't owe taxes on it. So that's considered gifting or donating highly appreciated securities. Now, someone's not going to likely do that for a $100 donation, right? But if you consider you might be giving a, you know, several hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars instead of just writing that check, which all your money in your checking account already has been taxed or will be eventually, right? It's all earnings that you've had, it's income, what have you. You could consider gifting that highly appreciated securities, and that way you avoid that that capital gain tax. And that we see a lot with our clients because, you know, they're long-term investors. And so they bought some mutual funds. You can do this with mutual funds, stocks. You can do it with bond funds. They've held the securities for a long time. And at some point, selling it could put them in a detrimental tax position. But they're charitably minded anyway. So again, instead of writing a check that's already been, you know, that cash in your bank has already, like, been taxed, you could donate the securities directly. Most organizations can take in donations of stock or mutual funds. So that's something to start with the charity, start with that nonprofit organization and make sure that they are set up to be able to take in donated securities.
Okay. And then what about personal property and like retirement plans?
Yep, exactly. So jumping to retirement plans, if you are over age 70 and a half, there is a really incredible donation feature that you can take advantage of that has a great tax savings. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. You do that out of an individual retirement account, an IRA. So this is the section of the of this conversation that's going to have a whole bunch of acronyms. So it's an IRA, right? It's your retirement account. If you are over, again, age 70 and a half, and it's down to the day, you have to actually wait till that half birthday, you can take distributions, they're called QCD, that's Qualified Charitable Distribution, from that retirement account, from that IRA. And if it goes directly to charity, you never pay taxes on it. Now, stepping back a second, an IRA, that money's never been taxed, right? That savings you did at work or you saved in an IRA on the outside, you got a tax deduction along the way, anything you added to it, it grows and grows and grows. And then in retirement, any money you take out of that for spending gets taxed like income. So again, if you donate from that bucket instead of donating from your checking account, you're giving away money that's never been taxed to you. So again, it starts at age 70 and a half. So it's a really important planning opportunity. When I work with clients, you know, if they are, again, charitably minded, you know, we set it up so after age 70 and a half, they really should never be writing a check from their checking account again. They should gift from their IRA. And you work with your advisor on that, and they would make sure that all the forms get signed right and that that money goes directly to the charity. It can't come to you first. It's got to go directly from the account to the charity.
And what if I have like an art collection or, you know, something that I collect that is of value, significant value? What then?
Yeah. So you can donate, right, just about anything. What you need to just look on the backside of it in a way, right, is what is that tax implication to that donation? So if you gift a collection, like an art piece to a charity, a nonprofit, you will either get to deduct what you paid for it, or you may be able to deduct the market value. And it depends on the nonprofit that it goes to and what their use is. So if they are going to sell it and use it, that's different than if they are going to hold it and use it. Again, art's kind of a good example, right? You donate a piece of art to an art museum. You know, that's of value to them differently than you just donating a piece of valuable art to a food bank. So that, you know, work with your tax advisor on which gives you kind of which deduction. But you can definitely donate that, and, you know, it will get you some tax benefit.
Okay. Well, again, I think it's important to share, to reiterate what you shared before, that you're just looking to work with individuals who already have a mindset of giving and to maximize their ability to do so through these strategies. So we're going to take a break right now because Heather, when we return, is going to dive into some other specifics. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. ¶¶ Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations for Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is our very own Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor at EIG. So, Heather, let's just dive right into some of these different strategies. Give us more information on specifics.
Thank you, Jill. Well, another topic I wanted to go over is a very specific way to give. And it's really pretty popular, especially when you want to maximize your tax deduction, but maybe you don't know exactly where you want those funds to go all in 1 year. So this strategy is called a donor advised fund. So it's an account that is held at a sponsoring organization, like a foundation, that is considered and qualifies as a 501c3. So I'm going to just act as if I'm going to say I, like I am the client. So if I am the client or the donor, I'm going to open up a donor advised fund, DAF or a DAF. You may have heard of these. A donor advised fund at this sponsoring organization, a foundation, and I'm going to open that fund and I'm going to put in the amount of money I want to give to nonprofits. And I'm going to put that in at one time or across a tax across the year. And I get a tax deduction for that contribution, that the funds I put into that account that I set up at the sponsoring organization right then, right? So has it gone to the end charity yet? No, it hasn't. But it's now out of my hands. I can't get it back. So it is considered, in the IRS's mind, a tax deduction because, again, that foundation that is the 501c3 is in charge of that. And I'm kind of using air quotes here because they're going to manage the funds, the investments and whatnot, if they're the manager of it. But I, the donor, I get to guide or advise where those funds go. So let's just say I have a really big income year. Maybe I sold a business and I have all this income that came in. And I work with my tax advisor, and it's like, holy cow, a lot is going to go to the IRS for taxes. Well, if I also have a heart for giving, and I have all this money that just came in from the sale of the business, I might say, you know what, why don't I donate a whole bunch of that and get that big tax deduction in this big income year where it is the most valuable, right? A tax deduction is most valuable when you have high income. So again, I sold my business, I have a high income year, I've got a bunch of extra cash, I have a giving heart. I might say, you know what, let me put $100,000 in there. Maybe I put $300,000 in there, right? Maybe I put 50 grand in. I'm going to preload that with whatever I want to give. And what I can consider is maybe that pre-funds my charitable giving over the next 5 or 10 years. So again, using just some specific numbers, if I typically give $5,000 a year and I have this big income year and I've got extra money and a $50,000 donation would really benefit me, but I might not want to give $50,000 in 1 year to any organization. I might not find a bunch of organizations that total 50 grand of what I want to give. Plus, I know in the future, I'm going to want to continue to give because I'm charitably minded. I might say I'm going to put $50,000 in this donor advised fund. Again, I typically give $5,000 a year. So we can all do math. That kind of set aside money for my next 10 years of giving. So it sits in that account. It will likely grow or drop, right, depending on how it's invested with the overall upward trend likely. And then each time I want to donate to a nonprofit, I can donate out of that fund. I do not get another tax deduction, right? I got that when I loaded it. So that like being able to use that to bundle a bunch of giving is really helpful. But stepping a little back from that, it also simplifies my giving. You know, how does it do that? Well, I can put all sorts of things in that donor advised fund. The example I walked through was cash. I can certainly give cash. In the last segment of the show, I talked about donating highly appreciated securities. I can put those into the donor advised fund. I can put, if I own crypto, I can put crypto into the donor advised fund, right? And then it's going to sit there again. That sponsoring organization that manages it is likely going to sell all of that, and you'll just have the value in there. And that's fine because you've given it away. So you're not in charge of how it's managed anymore. But again, you are in charge of where it goes to a nonprofit from your account. So you get to advise. You get to propose grants. That's what it's called. You're proposing grants out of your fund. It's kind of not your money anymore. So that sponsoring organization, you need to make sure that whatever their rules are align with what your values are.
Give us, I'm just curious, examples of some of the foundations or the supporting organizations might want to consider.
They can be a community foundation. As an example, Greater Milwaukee Foundation, Waukesha County Community Foundation. There's national donor advised fund sponsoring organizations. The platform we use is on Schwab Charitable Giving. Fidelity has a platform. And then there's more like single issue organizations. Maybe it's by faith or by identity or by cause. There's a National Christian Foundation. So each of these sponsoring organizations can have different guidelines, and they can have different sort of rules around the size of the gift that you can give out of your fund.
Is there a minimum amount too?
Well, they might not want to do $25 here and there, so they may have like a minimum of a $500 grant that you can grant.
What about getting into it?
Getting into it, they may have a minimum as well. It may be $5,000, it may be $10,000. So, you know, that's all things to consider. Again, why would you do this? It's because you want to simplify your giving, and you want to kind of bundle a bunch of giving possibly into 1 year. You can also add over time. It's not a one and done. You can continue to refill that bucket. I talked about the example of maybe you have one high income year that you want to bundle a bunch of giving into. Well, some people have multiple high income years, right? Maybe those last few years of retirement, they are making, you know, the most that they'll ever make, and then they know they're going to retire. Well, those are good years to divert some income, especially, again, if you've got a charitable heart and you want that to be able to continue through retirement and you feel good about what you're giving away right now and all the rest of your retirement planning is well set, you know, that could be a really good, those years could be really good to give to the donor advised fund. And then again, you've got this pool that you can give from in a very simple way. Yes, there's some rules around it, but you know, when you understand those rules, it's very simple to be able to grant out of your donor advised fund to the different charities that you want to do, that you want to give to. So the other piece of that is, you know, you load this up, right? Wherever you're at throughout your lifetime, you are adding to it, you're gifting out of it. Maybe there's going to be a balance that's always there. You can consider it as part of your legacy. So when you open up a donor advised fund, you can tell them, and you can change it over time, but you tell them what you want to have happen to those funds if you were to pass away. So you could say, I want my family to be in charge of this, right? So then they get to be the person that proposes those grants, and they can continue your family legacy that way. You could say, you know what, I want it just to be distributed to these charities at my death. You know, it's just going to end when I'm gone, but I want to take care of these different organizations. You can do a mix of that as well. So it's a way to really think about, you know, you've set aside this money. What do you want to have happen to it? I love the thought of having my donor advised fund be taken over by my kids and grandkids, if I ever get any. you know, I'm not getting ahead of myself. My kids are still in college, so that's probably not up for a while. But, you know, so I really look at that, and I think that would just be an incredible gift, right, that they get to take that over. They know who I am. They know my heart and what's important to me. And they have, you know, their own values as well. And to see and to think about that coming together, they can actually help me do this now, right? We could make this a family activity where we decide, okay, we have all this money set aside. We put some highly appreciated securities in there. We put some cash in there because it was a high income year. Now, how do we as a family want to be able to donate this over time?
Yeah, and they get involved. I think that's awesome. It's one thing to give when people give cash gifts, but to give get your kids involved where they can be part of the boots on the ground, if you will, and making those decisions, I think, is awesome.
Right. And I wanted to get into a little bit of statistics about the popularity of donor advised funds. You know, again, with that, like, look towards bundling and the fact that this is available. And this is available right now. And I do think the IRS is going to start to look at this a little bit different. I am not a fortune teller by any means, but there have been different articles written about that. Just to throw out some stats, there are in the United States, and this is according to the Nonprofit Philanthropic Trust 2023 DAF report, there are over 1.9 million donor advised funds in America. So, and that's a million with an M. So 1.9 million different donor advised funds are out there.
You can have multiple DAFs with multiple sponsoring organizations.
Yes,
right?
You can. Right. So this might not be almost 2 million individual people, but there are almost 2 million DAFs out there. The total assets in those DAFs at the end of 2022, which, you know, putting my kind of financial planning geek hat on, that was a down year. So since then, I'm sure this number has grown through market growth alone. At the end of 2022, it was $228 billion, billion with a B, are in donor advised funds. Now, we talked about, hey, you can pre-fund your giving. You can make this your legacy, and your family can gift over time. So that's what you can tell many people have done when there's that big accumulation. In 2023, about $85 billion were added to donor advised funds. Billion, again, with a B. And out of donor advised funds that year, what went out was $52 billion. So there's a net accumulation there of $30 billion that have been given to a sponsoring organization where people got that tax deduction. And then there's $228 billion that haven't gone out to boots on the ground charities yet. So, you know, again, I think it's a great tax strategy. Again, the legacy planning around it, I'm really excited for. And, you know, we have to realize that that's also part of this rolling bucket that's kind of always going to be there. Nonprofits are really trying to find out, how do they get to the people in charge of these, right? How do they get to the donors that maybe have an accumulation of $100,000 in their donor advised fund or more, right? And that's just, you know, working with the nonprofits like I do, that's not the easiest thing for them to do because there's a lot of confidentiality there. You know, the donor advised fund sponsoring organizations do not report out who has these funds. I mean, the IRS knows and things like that, but like they don't do an annual report to say this is how much the Deaton Family Fund has in it. So just some side tips. So again, that popularity and the thought of using it as a way to pre-fund your giving in the future is shown in those numbers.
And so perhaps a tip you would give is for these nonprofits is just get out there and network. Get out there and be talking to these sponsoring organizations so that you your chances or the likelihood of you getting on that list is greater.
Yeah, for sure, because there's advisors within those sponsoring organizations that try to matchmake, right? People that are looking to give to a certain type of cause, maybe they're not really quite sure the organizations in the area. So those advisors can do some matchmaking. Additionally, what I've told nonprofits is you need to get curious with your donor base and your prospects, right? Really being able to ask them, have you heard of a donor advised fund? Do you have a donor advised fund, right? And not that you're going to be able to glom onto them more, but at least you'd have an understanding of maybe what their giving situation is.
And I think, too, that if you're a nonprofit listening and all this seems very overwhelming, Heather and I have teamed up because of my involvement with nonprofits, mm-hmm. where she'll go out and she'll partner with the nonprofits and go out and talk to their donor base. And we'll talk more about that in a later segment with more details. But so Heather has been talking about this idea of warm hand giving. What happens after you pass away? There are multiple strategies in that regard as well. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, Heather's going to dive into that. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations for EIG, and I'm continuing my conversation today with our own Heather Deaton, EIG Wealth Advisor. So, Heather, they say two things are for certain, death and taxes, and so...
We're talking about both of them.
We're hitting on both of those, so why don't you talk about what some strategies are after you pass away?
So... certainly, not everyone has or chooses to give things away that they might need or their family might need. Along the way, you know, you may have some different options of what you want to do when you're gone, where you want your assets, your savings, your home, your retirement accounts, like where you want those to go. So a few different ways to get things pointed to where you want to go, and honestly, whether it's a charity or not, would be one being a will, right? So you can put a percentage or a dollar amount that you want to go to charity. You want the rest of it to be split across. Maybe it's some family members. Maybe it's other people in your life, right? Maybe it all goes to charity and you want to have that split across charities. Maybe you put your charity as the backup. You know, I've got one child, no grandkids. I want everything to go to them. If something happens to both of us at the same time, I want it to go to charity, right? You can do that in your will. Now, a will goes through probate, and so that can be a lengthy and expensive process because it's the courts and it's attorneys. So another option that is similar to a will, but it's kind of a boosted up will almost on steroids, is a revocable living trust. Now, I'm not an attorney. Jill's not an attorney. So this would certainly be a conversation to have with an estate planning attorney. But overall, a revocable living trust, the first thing is that it's going to be private and it avoids probate. So it doesn't go through the courts. So the it's more efficient at the end because it's going to involve, it's not going to have the court proceeding, and it's going to just not be as costly from a lawyer perspective. It can provide some protection to the individuals that you're bequeathing to through the revocable living trust. Again, work with an estate planning attorney on that. But because it's what happens to everything at the end, you can name a charity in that as well. Again, it's going to be private. So, you know, that wouldn't be something that's going to be public record because it doesn't go through the court system like a will does. So we here like trust better than wills just because of those features. But again, talking to an estate planning attorney would be the best next step on that for anyone that's interested. We facilitate those conversations with our clients all the time because, you know, we want to see the full picture of what, again, their wishes, their goals, their dreams, their fears are, because that's what helps us build a well-rounded financial plan, which covers things like what happens when you're gone and what goes to who and what charities do you want to support. Another way is a beneficiary designation. So you can have a beneficiary designation on your IRAs and your 401ks. You have a beneficiary designation on any kind of brokerage account. It's called a transfer on death, a TOD. Your bank accounts need beneficiaries. That's called a payable on death, a POD. So you can name people or nonprofit organizations in any of those beneficiary designations. If you do it, if you do beneficiary designations, that kind of goes around the will or around the trust, right? It's going to go directly to whoever you name. And that's going to avoid probate as well. So, you know, working with your advisor and your estate planning attorney is going to be helpful for you to decide how you want to set this up. I like when clients do charitable giving through beneficiary designation because it's easier to change. Maybe the organization they want to support goes, it doesn't no longer exists, right? Well, if it's built into their will or their trust, they would have to go to the attorney and get that changed. And that is going to be attorney fees. If you do it through a beneficiary designation, it's very easy to swap out. You just got to do some algebra, some math around how much is that charity going to end up getting if they get X percent of this one account. That, again, might be invested, might be being spent, might be being added to, right? So it's just kind of like annually you want to kind of double check your math on that. Thinking about which accounts should go where. That's another piece that, you know, is not overly complicated, but we have to remember what gets taxed to a person and the fact that charities don't pay taxes. So I mentioned IRAs before. That's a retirement account. You've never paid taxes on that. If you take any money out of it, you're charged taxes. If my IRA goes to my kids, they're going to have to take it out within like 10 years. It's a whole rule. They're going to pay taxes on that because I never did. So they're going to have to pay taxes on that. Again, it's a retirement account. If I give that retirement account to charity, charities don't pay taxes. So the charity actually gets more. If I also have, say, a brokerage account, I can give my kids the brokerage account because they get a step up in basis, so they avoid capital gains on that. So you want to think about the type of investments, or excuse me, the type of accounts you have, and if they're tax deferred, if they're taxable, and then that's a way to decide kind of where your, who should get what, and then again at the end, the way to be most efficient, where your family gets the most, where the charity gets the most. You know, I'm not here talking about this to avoid paying taxes ever. Taxes are important, right? We have to pay our fair share of taxes. But if we are charitably minded, we just want to be able to be most efficient with it. And that extends into when you pass away as well.
And to maximize it. Because exactly. Again, it's a win-win for everybody.
It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
Another asset that people have would be life insurance, right? There's different ways to use life insurance for charitable giving. Sometimes people want to give their IRAs to charity and then they give their kids the life insurance proceeds, right? Because that's money that isn't taxed. Another way is to not worry about that so much, and maybe you give the life insurance as a beneficiary to the charity. So again, you pass away, that life insurance death benefit is going to go to the charity, or a portion of it is if you just do a percentage. You can also make that charity the owner of the life insurance. So you actually give them that policy on your life. Maybe it's paid up, right? Maybe you're paying the premium still. You can make them the owner, and that gives you a tax deduction in that year. Now, that's a little bit more complicated. It's either the money you've put into it, or it's the replacement value, whichever's less, plus any premiums that you pay along the way, you get the tax deduction. Because again, you've given it away. So that policy stays in force. You die. The charity's already the owner. They're going to be the beneficiary. And they just are the ones that get to kind of process that death claim with the insurance company.
Okay. Well, you're talking about some complicated things. And obviously, there's more complicated assets out there, like real estate. Do you want to touch on that? Or
yeah,
so much to go into on limited time here. But
yeah. So if, you know, we talked about life insurance policies. We talked about retirement assets. We talked about like brokerage accounts and cash accounts that you've got. You know, another major investment and asset that people have is their house, right? And they might need that to live in for the rest of their life. So you might not be able to just give your house to charity. I mean, there's charities that will take it and you will get a tax deduction. But if you still want to live there, you can actually donate that in advance. And it's called like a retained life estate. Again, this is more complex, but it's where you would still have the ability to live in it. You would maintain it. You would get the use of it through your lifetime. But then at death, the charity is going to get it. Why would you do that in advance? Well, maybe you want the tax deduction. So you get a tax deduction of a percentage of that property value when you set up this retained life estate that can't be undone. You know, so a lot of this giving, it's truly giving, right? You can't really, you can't easily undo it or undo it at all. And then, of course, if you just want it to go to charity at your death, you could do a beneficiary designation on the house. Typically, it's called a TOD, a transfer on death deed. So again, you know, just thinking about the different things that we have that are valuable, and we might need to use our IRAs and our taxable accounts, right, our brokerage accounts for our own living for the rest of our lifetime. We might only have life insurance or not at death. We may only have a house or maybe not even that, right? So taking inventory of where you're at along the way is really beneficial when you try to plan your charitable giving planning during your life and at the end.
Okay, well, there's You touched on all kinds of things, Heather, and I know, you know, people listening might be a little bit overwhelmed, but again, just know that Heather's here to help. But you might be asking, how do we get started? I mean, there's all this information, but where do we start? So stay tuned, because after our commercial break, we're going to dive into that with Heather. So we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations for Ellen Becker Investment Group, and we're finishing up our interview today with Heather Deaton, EIG Wealth Advisor. So I asked before the break, or I mentioned before the break, that if you're listening, all kinds of great stuff that Heather has shared, but you might be wondering, how do I get started? Heather, you want to help us out in with
right.
that?
Because there's so many options. I just went through, I can't even count how many. Right? So there's a lot of different options, a lot of creativity. But what you really want to start with is your heart, right? You want to start as to what is your goal? What is your objective when it comes to that charitable giving or you know, even a bigger term of legacy? So really thinking about that and in relation to what you've got, like taking inventory of your assets, right? What are the values of the accounts? What kind of taxability are they? That's not for you to totally make all the decisions, but understanding what you've got is going to be a place to start. If you've saved $1 million for retirement, you know, you probably have a feeling of how much of that you don't really want to part with right now, right? And that's going to help you set that. If you've saved $2.5 million, the question's the same. How much of that do you want to set aside for charity now? How much of that do you want to make sure you're not giving away until the end? But really that, again, taking inventory of the assets, and it's taking inventory of almost like what your core values are, right? So again, legacy, how do you want to do this? Do you want to see this come to the, do you want to see the plan happen? Do you feel like it's better for your plan for that to happen at the end, right? When you die. So that's that warm hand versus deferred giving. Consulting a professional to be able to create that plan with you. Again, lots of different solutions and ideas and intricacies that I touched on in this show. You know, that's things that we as advisors here at Ellen Becker work with our clients all the time on. And being able to set that plan, and then one thing we know for sure about a plan is that there's going to need to be updates and changes along the way, because that's inevitable. Change is inevitable. So being able to have that team that you work with, that financial advisor, your tax professional, your estate planning attorney, you know, this isn't something that has to be reviewed every quarter or every month, but, you know, when something major changes, every few years to make sure that you're still on the right track. And again, you know, life happens, and what we value doesn't change at its core, but what our reaction is and what our plan is might change. You know, you could have illness or injury in a family. You could, you know, again, your charities could change as far as what you hold closest. And then keeping your family at least aware of what your plans are, right? It's going to, if you want most or all of your assets at the end to go to charity, you know, and you have kids and grandkids, your kids might benefit from knowing that earlier than later. My friend this weekend just told me that her mom and dad told her that they're giving to their family now. They're giving experiences. They have a heart of generosity. And at the end, everything's going to go to charity. You know, all my friend and her siblings, they're all they're very well set. It's going to be fine. But it's good for her to know that, so she understands at the end that that's not, you know, something that's going to come back to her. So just making sure your family's aware can really help them understand where it is that you value things.
And then we talked a little bit about this before as far as you jumping in to help. You've got an area of expertise that I don't have. And so when I'm talking to nonprofits, I will connect you with them. So let's say you're a nonprofit. that wants to tap into your expertise, or maybe just someone who wants to tap into your expertise in some of the other areas, share with us all the different ways that you offer support.
Well, as a wealth advisor, I work with individuals and families, small businesses, and nonprofits on financial planning strategies, account management, and all the things that we do here at Ellen Becker. Additionally, you know, I love to share this passion that I have for giving back with others. And so that it has been working with nonprofit staff and leadership for them to understand some of these strategies so they are more aware and equipped to have the conversations with their donor base and their prospective donor bases. I also love to work with those that want to be donors, right? The ones that want to give, have that heart, maybe have some complexities in their financial situation or not, and want to be able to take advantage of some of the different strategies that we've got. So I work with, you know, with doing seminars for the community on that, and then as well as nonprofits for their leadership or their donor base. If they're giving a donor luncheon, like a give back, and they want to have an educational component, I do that for nonprofits as well.
And I think it's important to note or to share with people that EIG as a firm is involved in so many philanthropic endeavors. And Heather and I, again, team up to do some philanthropic events. We have nonprofit seminars throughout the year, but we also have a radio show dedicated specifically to nonprofits where we give them a platform to share with the community all the great things that they're doing. And so if you are a nonprofit and you would like to get some information on that, you can reach out to me at jill@ellenbecker.com. You can also listen to these shows on WISN AM 1130 to get some more information. Visit our website. So thank you, Heather Deaton, EIG Wealth Advisor, for sharing your areas of expertise. Again, it could be a little overwhelming, but that's why you're here, is to offer support for people.
If anyone wants to reach out, they can certainly call the office or email me at heather@ellenbecker.com.
Okay, thanks so much, Heather. Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1. Milwaukee's philanthropic community airs on Sunday mornings at 10. If you enjoyed today's show and you want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, we encourage you to visit ellenbecker.com or call our office at 262-691-3200. As always, we hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.